And welcome back, everybody, for another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 867. It's a Monday afternoon, so that means we are recapping the week in Fab. Good, bad, minuscule, doesn't matter. We are here to recap it. Week 17 was a little bit of all of that, if you want to sum it up. It wasn't that exciting because it is the All-Star break, folks, but we'll recap the mega moves. We'll talk some main event plays to maybe get you ready for your week 18 Fab. Some names to keep an eye on. We're also going to talk about a little article that our good buddy Ben wrote on the Patreon. He does a mid-season and an end-of-season ADP versus player rater conversations. We'll break that down a bit at the end of the show after a recap Fab. But before we get to that, you can follow this Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how you doing, my friend?
Doing pretty well, Bubba. Big night on the Bubba Podcast Network. We got our show, and then we have the live listener league in a couple hours once we're done. I'm also rocking my new Ben Rice shirt from Myrtleware that my wonderful girlfriend got me over the weekend. So
Benny support Barrels, my man tonight. Awesome.
Yeah, Benny Barrels awesome. With the Yankee, kind of like the old school Yankee logo for the writing.
That's sick. Mm-hmm. It's like weathered Yankees like logo. That's pretty sweet. Yeah, Myrtleware comes through. My only gripe with Rotoworld, I love Kenny. I've known Kenny since he started. I used to actually promote him on the show, but now he's gotten so big he doesn't need me anymore. He does great work. The only bummer I always have is, it's probably financial, which makes sense. It's primarily like Yankees, Braves, Red Sox, Padres. It's all the big markets. I'm like, make some Giants stuff. I know we suck, but every once in a while, there's got to be something cool to make. Like, you can make 55 Mason shirts. Like, let's make some Giants gear. I'll rock it.
That's like a Giants shirt almost, because Justin likes the Giants. So
kind of, yeah. But I don't need Justin's face. I don't want another man's face on my on me like that. I feel uncomfortable wearing the Bubba and the Bloom shirt with Ryan and our faces on the back of me. That's a sick shirt. That's good stuff. Ben has the first pick in the Gladiators. I'm expecting Ben Rice to be taken one overall, but I doubt that's
the heart. That's the pick that the heart would make. Yeah,
it's too disciplined. He won't do it. But if you want to talk about setting a roller coaster of emotions off to start a stream, Ben going Ben Rice out the gate would be it gives you flexibility. Catcher, first baseman, so many plays to go still.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
And we're going to talk about how valuable catchers are at the end of this show, because they have stolen the draft so far this season. But before we get to that, let's talk a little Fab. Like I mentioned at the top, it was a slow week 17. We figured it would be with the All-Star break coming up, because you don't know a lot of the starters coming up on the schedule ahead, plus people have taken the weekend off. Like, there's a lot of factors involved. And as the season goes along, football takes over, folks, because we got like 10 weeks to go here. Numbers keep dwindling, as we discussed. But Ben, using Ryan's NFBC Fab tracker on the Bubba and the Bloom Patreon, what are we looking at financially this week? Because this was, weirdly enough, though, yes, the money was down as expected. The number of moves, not too off.
Right, and we were pretty much in line with 2025 in both contests. So starting off with the OCs, as we normally do, we are now at $271 on average per team. Last year, we were at $261 through week 17, so off by 10, but we were off by 10 last week as well. That's because this week in the OCs, we spent $14 on average per team, identical to 2025, and that 14 this week is down from 25 last week. So a big drop in spending, but in line with the prior season. And I'm pacing $10 behind on average in the spend in the OCs this year. Moving over to the main event, we had a lot lower budget per team at $229 per team on average in the main event, compared to $228 last year at this time through 17 weeks. So that's impressive. And we were also down in spending per team this past week. It was $18 compared to $29 last week. But in 2025, week 17, it was 19, so only off by a dollar there. And then switching over to the ads per league and the OCs, we were down to 15 from 17 last week. So we are at, so this past week, week 17, the OCs, we were at fewer than 1.5 moves per team on average. And then the main event was 26, down from 27. So we've gone down a move per week there, but that's slightly below 2 per team. So the main event's still more active than the OCs. More spending, more moves, which isn't really too surprising. Smaller sample size, higher financial entry, so more incentive to keep fighting. And just looking ahead to next week, we're at 13 and 10, the main event OC respectively, for the weekly spend in 2025. So I don't know what's going to happen this week to change much. So I expect we'll be down there next week as well.
next week, and then I get, might pick up a little after that once we start getting some more action in play. But I wouldn't expect a whole lot unless there's some random two steps that pop up out of nowhere. But I think we'll be kind of locked in, as you mentioned. So let's get to it. As usual, we'll start with the NFC OC, talk mains along the way, and then we'll flip over here because we've talked most of these players. And we'll start with one that we've talked a lot, but I think he deserves a little more discussion because Kyle Karros is a name that I know Ryan and I have talked about for about a month at least on the Bubba and the Bloom fab previews on Thursday nights. And Kyle Karros continues to rake. Kyle Karros was picked up in 144 online championships, the most picked up player in the OCs. Average of $14, max of 55, low of 1. He was picked up in 4 main events, is already widely rostered. Average of 31 there, Ben. But when it comes to Kyle Karros, well-deserving. I picked him up a while ago when I dropped Nolan Arenado. It was good run. It was over. Since June 1st, Karros is hitting 330 with 6 home runs, 25 runs scored, and 19 RBIs. Plate discipline's pretty solid. Love what I'm seeing from Kyle Karros. Ben, what are your thoughts on Mr. Karros?
This is a guy I'm invested in, Bubba. I actually added him back in the start of June. I added Karros way back in week 12. So that was June 7th in one main, and then week 14, June 21st in the other main. So I've had him for a while on my teams, mainly because of the way 15-teamers are and the shallow third base pool, which I've been complaining about. Maybe a little bit on this show, and definitely to you guys, and just to myself as well. But Karros, despite playing in cores, he's been productive. I played him last week, and he had like 2 home runs last week, had 27 at-bats total. Yeah. Yep. So it was kind of a risky play, but I just pulled up his splits right now just to see. He's an 864 OPS at home, which is you kind of expect, but he's a 749 on the road this year. So Karros is just good wherever he plays. He's got some speed, 3 steals, better than nothing at third. He has 9 homers. One thing that's pretty impressive is that he has 47 runs, so that's pacing pretty well. He doesn't even hit that high in the lineup for the Rockies, and he wasn't playing all the time this year, I believe. There were some weeks where actually, he's played pretty consistently, but the at-bats kind of have fluctuated week to week a little bit for him. But Karros has been he's been great, especially in 15s, and he's a good stream, I guess, for the OCs in this upcoming weekend because the Rockies start out the second half at home. And just because of the way third base is, I think Karros could be a keeper in OCs. I'm not really I don't have that depth for the OCs. I saw in 15th, the main event, he's definitely someone that you should roster until it falls apart. And then you could even play him on the road and I guess easier matchups, I would say. I wouldn't always play him on the road if you can help it, but I'm looking to play him this Friday for sure over someone like Austin Riley, who's just been horrible.
Yeah, no, Karros to me, he's locked in 15s. He's at third base or corner infield. Like he's even on the road, like he's playing well enough right now, and the replacement's a little worse. Like to your point in OCs, I think he's still locked in, at least where I have him, because like he's a Matt Chapman replacement, Nolan Arenado replacement. Heck, he's been a Blaze Jordan replacement. I love Blaze. He's been in a slump, which is weird because his like approach is still fine. He's just not getting the results, which is fine. He happens. He's young. But I'd play Karros pretty much every day right now until otherwise, even on the road. And obviously, like you said, in 12s, there's depth. You can make that pivot on the road if you have to. But 15s, I think he's locked in, so I want to give him a little shout at the top. Because, like, yeah, you've been on him for a while. I've been on him for a while. Many others have, but obviously 144 hadn't, and they caught up to that this past week in the OCs. And that's the beauty of some of these, especially OCs, not so much the main events or the ACs out there. But in the OCs, if you just scroll along, we'll talk about my pickups later. I got an Eugenio Suarez for $11 this week in an OC. Like, there's players just sitting out there on the wire because some people drop for who knows what reasons. They do it, and you just need to scroll a little bit, and you'll find some players going, huh, this is interesting. And Karros might have been one for many people this week. All right, the next most added player in the online championships, Andrew Kittredge. You're not getting those 2 saves you got, folks. Picked up in 120 OCs, as high as $79. Average of 13th, so the 75th percentile was $17, so not too bad overall there. He was picked up in 29 main, so he was like the third or fourth most added player. Maybe like 5th or 6th most added player in the mains. Average of 28, high of 121, 75th percentile of 34. I mentioned Kittredge got those 2 saves this past week after everybody picked up Tyler Wells. I'll leave that to you because I know where you're going to go with this, and I agree with you, so I won't steal all that thunder. But Kittredge was solid again this week. He has not given up a run since June 20th. It's been like 8 straight outings. He's almost got at least 1K in each outing. Been extremely effective is what I'll say. and he's got closing experience in the past. So am I surprised by this? No. Is it frustrating? A bit. What were your thoughts on the Kittredge, about Kittredge and this whole Baltimore situation?
Yeah, it was definitely a little tilting for me when Kittredge got those two saves this past week because, as I reported last week on the show, I think I added Wells in one league, in a very important league for myself, and that's always frustrating, especially someone who got burned by Jacob Junis earlier in the year. I don't want this to happen again. But I will say, at least closer Monkey, reliever Recon, they still view Wells as the closer, and so, and they don't even have it as like a committee. It seems more like a like Wells is the fireman almost, because I think he pitched in leverage on the ninth when he got the win. Then Kittredge came in for the save, and but the, also at the same time, I'm looking at the usage. Wells, that was Wells' second game in a row. So on Friday the 10th, I think that's why Kittredge got the save. I'm telling, that's what I'm telling myself, is because Wells was unavailable. But there has to be a reason why they went to Wells first, the Orioles, last week for those two saves. I guess last week is 2 weeks ago at this point. And yeah, I looked at Kittredge. He was someone I liked in DCs, I believe, this year, just as a spec for the Cubs, I think is where he started out. And then, I don't know, like his numbers aren't that good this year. 4.32 ERA, 1.28 whip. The Ks are just about one per inning. Seems more like it's like a hit issue and kind of getting unlucky with allowing runners to score, if I'm just looking at his raw stats. But I think Kittredge makes more sense in like a 15. I don't know if he's worthy of a 12-team start, but I guess people are just saying, okay, well, the last two saves went to him, so maybe he's the closer now. And the 79 max is a little extreme. If I go to Ryan's tracker, the 13 average is definitely a little more reasonable, considering the balance left in the OC. So as a flyer, like if you had, if these people had added Wells last week and then they wanted to get Kittredge this week, like I know, I think Anthony Gialdi said that on Waxman's pod. He kind of did that this weekend, little hedge. I get that, but I just hope that it actually is Wells for my sake. But it could, Kittredge, like you said, Kittredge has a little of experience more so than Wells, but it's just weird that they went to Wells first.
I feel like it's got the makings of a, like you said, it's a leverage thing where it's going to be some weeks are going to be great, some weeks aren't. You almost just have to stick it out. Otherwise, it's going to be a tough one to decide which one happens. And maybe it changes and eventually things go separate ways and one takes over. Who knows? But it does feel like Wells will be the primary guy, but if there's a leverage, you're not going to see him. And we've seen that on other teams this year. Like, that's been clear as day. So this is just like one of the, you know, other 10 teams in the league. We're trying to figure out what the closing situation is. And here you go. So I don't fault anybody, especially in 15s, rostering both and seeing where it goes. In 12s, like to your point, it's going to be a little sketchy for Kittredge, but it could be sketchy for Wells at the same time. That's the frustrating part. So my biggest thing is kind of just, you kind of have to stick with it and sit it out. But the other thing, as I'll mention, is, and we have a listener question later, which we'll start talking about a category as the season gets, you know, shortened here. We only have 10 weeks of Fab left. When do we start shifting towards categories and stuff? This is one of those things, like a guy like Kittredge is nice to have if you want to start going like four reliever weeks and stuff to try to get saves, because he'll also give you good ratios and strikeouts more often than not. So that's why I'm going to at least say in 12s, I get it. If you want to start shifting your approach, might be too early, but we'll talk about that later. But that's where a pitcher like Kittredge and a few other closers or possible closers will come in handy later. Herberto Hernandez, we don't have to go too deep here. We've talked about him plenty, but Hernandez was picked up in 92 OCs, as high as $43, as low as a buck, average of 10. He was picked up in four mains, average of 29. He's dropped in three OCs as well. I'm pretty sure Herberto was picked up because Owen Casey hit the IL. Not to mention, since July 1st, Herberto Hernandez hitting 324 with five jacks. Like, it's pretty impressive. We've known how good he is. It's just a playing time thing, and it feels like we all think that he's going to get more time, Ben.
Yeah, I'm looking at his weekly stats right now. Herberto has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He has homered in 8 of the last 9 weeks with a 2-homer week and 2 3-homer weeks. So he's been pretty incredible. He was actually dropped in 2 of my leagues last week, my 15s. One was the listener league, one was a main. And I was just outbid on him. I was trying to get him back in both spots. I do have him in one main, luckily. And just looking at the playing time, that's really been the concern with Herberto, is that I think, yeah, so at, following last, when it was last Sunday, he had kind of played every other game that week. kind of inexplicably, but he played basically all of this week. He only sat once on Tuesday versus a righty, albeit it was the first game of the week, so maybe you sat him for the Wednesday-Thursday, unfortunately. I don't know how he did, but I know he had a couple homers on the weekend. And Fangraphs has him as the number five hitter for the Marlins. He's been playing versus – he started versus the last three righties, last two lefties, and he has awesome metrics on StatCast, Hernandez. So I like him. He's on one of my most important teams, and he's going to be in my lineup more often than not, I think, especially because he has some speed with his profile as well, pretty good sprint speed. So I think this is like cleaning up the leagues where he's available, and I think that he should be rostered probably everywhere, Hernandez.
Yeah, I'm with you there because you said the end part there was where I was going to go with this. I told guys like in the Discord even like last week when they're like, oh, he's not starting. It was like a Monday or a Friday. And I'm like, hey, if he starts at least close to 50% of the weeks, the way he's hitting the baseball right now, you're going to be good. Because, Ben, how many people are complaining about power right now? And you started off the whole conversation mentioning those numbers without killing your batting average. Like, usually those guys, you don't get both. Like, so Jorge Soler hits 220 and gets you a home run a week. Even Joe Adell slumped a little bit. But, like, Arroberto's hitting over 300. He's striking out right around 20% of the time. He's walking over 10%. And he's just flexing his muscle no matter if it's a righty or lefty. He just has to be in the lineup. That's all we ask. And it works. Heck, some of those have been pinch hit home runs. I know that for a fact. He's come in and pinch hit and gone deep. So, yeah, Arroberto is a stud. I'm with you. And I've been saying it for a long, long time this season that I know we've been brainwashed over recent years that playing time. And I get it. To me, it feels it's more of a DC thing to accumulate. You still need to accumulate in season. I'm not oblivious to that. But I think we almost go overboard with it with certain players, and it costs us in the end. So, like, there's a fine line. It's not like a one-size-fits-all. But I think there's a point where we got to, like, take a step back and – yeah, if it's a six-game week, Arroberto might only play three, hopefully four. But those three, there's a great chance he's going yard at least once, maybe twice. Like, it's just – you got to start looking at the overall picture to me. And, hey, if he slumps, then you move on. All right, the next most added player in the OC is Jacob Webb of the Chicago Cubs. Now, this one's interesting to me for multiple reasons. I'll say it in a minute. Webb was picked up in 73 OCs, high of 33, average of 9, low of $1. He was picked up in four main events, average of 15, high of 22. This is where it's interesting. Okay, he was dropped in 8 OCs. He was dropped in 2 main events. That's the one that really surprises me. OCs, whatever. But I say because, yeah, there's been a kind of a group of potential closings like Thornton and Thielbar and some guys who've gotten saves in Chicago. But Webb's kind of the Wells in Chicago right now. He's been the leverage guy. He got a save on Sunday. He's gotten 3 saves in his last 5 outings going back to July 5th. So the last 8 days, he has 3 saves. He has not allowed a run. I'm confused more so by the drop spin than I am the pickups.
I agree. Yeah, I'm looking at his week-by-week breakdown, and Webb had 3 saves the last 2 weeks. And
yeah,
I don't
think Valencia... do you want right now in this environment?
Yeah, I'd kill for that in some spots. Is Palencia back soon?
Is there any news been, on him? No rumors of him doing anything. I know we have a good friends in another podcast that are working on their process right now. And they mentioned that they don't know why people are still rostering Palencia. And I have not heard anything.
I did catch that.
Yeah, I have not heard anything about Palencia status whatsoever.
Yeah, it can't be the Trent Thornton save on Saturday. It was a 3-pitch save, and then Webb got the save Sunday. So Fangraphs has a committee. Actually, so does Closer Monkey, but I think it's more like Webb's the primary. It seems like it's more his job than it is Wells, for example. So I definitely makes sense to add him, and I just don't understand. Maybe it's because I know that they Dom already got called out once, and I know he doesn't care because of the situation. He, like Waxman was talking about it. Dom dropped, I think, Tanner Scott just because he has a huge saves lead in that league, and maybe that's why you would drop Webb in the main event, which is kind of hard to believe, and maybe more so in an OC, but he should be rostered by somebody, Webber, at this point right now. So the ads are fine, and the drops are questionable. I'll say that.
Yeah, drops are questionable. I am curious to see how much he goes for next week, especially if this week and he gets even just one save in 3 games, because 3 saves in basically his 2 weeks is pretty sweet. So, especially when we get to the guys I added this week. So, yeah, Webb would be pretty cool to have rostered right now. And I looked up Daniel Palencia, by the way, and the latest I could find is they're shooting for late July for him to come back, but there's really not been much of anything to get too excited about right now. All right, we actually have a new name, a prospect to discuss here. Luis Lara of the Milwaukee Brewers is picked up in 72 OCs, high of 88, average of 18, picked up in 48 mains. That is the second most added player in the main events this weekend. Average of 20, high of 101, but 75th percentile of 24. So someone got a little excite for Mr. Lara on that one. But the question that Ryan and I had with Lara on Thursday night, what would the playing time situation be? Well, Lara's playing nearly every day is what I'll say. He's getting a ton of run right now in the lineup. He sits safely in four or five. He sits safely in all four starts is what I'll say that he's had. He's hitting 286 in the minors. It's a guy hit 321, nine homers, 24 steals. It's a very stolen base-like profile. What were your thoughts on Luis Lara? Because for now, playing time's there, and that makes him, I guess, enticing.
I definitely had bids in for Lara. They weren't very expensive bids, though. I didn't get him anywhere. It really came down to the uncertainty in the playing time. I know Jason Santu on Waxman's pod was saying that he was all in on Lara. One of the reasons he gave, which I understand where he's coming from, is that they gave him a contract, I believe, in the offseason or at some point this year. So Lara has a contract where that would incentivize the Brewers to play him. Okay. I'm looking at the lineup tracker. Two of those starts were Churio sits. Three of those starts were Churio sits. One on Tuesday, one Friday, one Saturday, and a doubleheader. This is weird.
Real quick, the Churio playing time is weird is what I'll say right out the gate. So just want to throw that out there. Continue.
So I just realized the Brewers actually had two doubleheaders that last week. Two on Tuesday. Because
they had a rain out on Friday.
And two on Saturday. And that's two of the sits for Churio. Or I guess the two sits, because if the Friday game was canceled, then he was going to sit that game anyway. So my point is, okay, so their best player sat twice, and that got Lara in the lineup. And then he's not going to play center over Mitchell. Mitchell's playing even versus lefties now, which is kind of crazy. I leave Sal Frelick, but he's started 3-7 of the last nine games. So if anything, Lara's playing time has come at the expense of Churio, which is not going to last. So I didn't want to go too crazy on the bids. I had him like for $3-$4 maybe, max of eight, if that. And I even compared Lara to Cooper Pratt because he has, prior this year, his career high in homers was four. He has nine this year in 78 games in AAA, which is a nice boost. But look at someone like Jacob Gonzalez. He had a huge power spike, and now he's not really hitting for power in the majors. Different profiles, of course, but Lara's, his calling cards, his speed. He had 45 steals 1 year, 44 the next. He had 24 this year. And he had 321 this year, but he had a couple seasons of like below 260. So the average isn't really a sure thing. And I like the Cooper Pratt comp, and I have Pratt in a league or two, and he's playing for me, but I don't know. It's just, at least Pratt was playing every day, and now Lara's kind of iffy with his playing time. So I wasn't too aggressive because of profile and like, I'm not going to destroy this dead horse, but just the playing time issues. And so I get the upside, but I just didn't want to go too crazy on it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And that's how a lot of the people I bet on this week was, I'm interested. I'm just not getting too excited. Again, there's a few I've made a mistake on, we'll talk about later. But for the most part, like, I was like $6 or less on pretty much everybody. There's a few like Eugenio I mentioned I got for 11, a couple pitchers I went a little high on. But yeah, for the most part, like hitting wise, I was in that $6 and below. Like I got Kyle Karros for $6 in the league. So a lot of $3 bids, like you were talking about, that's where Lara fit in. Don't think I got any of them. So not, we'll see. Playing time if it sticks, but I'm with you. The playing time at the expense of their potentially best player, tough to let that, unless he's still really banged up and we just don't know it and they want to give him extra time off, which would be interesting. All right, next most added player of the OCs, Brandon Pfaadt, picked up in 62 OCs, high of 27, average of $7. He's picked up in 21 mains, average of 20, high of 71, 75th percentile of 26. Brandon Pfaadt's a conundrum, and yes, I had bids in, Ben. Brandon Pfaadt has made three starts since coming back from AAA where they extended him to be a starter again. Picked up three wins. He's allowed three runs over 15 and two-thirds innings. 10 strikeouts. More importantly, Ben, he's allowed one walk. And to me, even more importantly, one home run, which is usually his biggest bugaboo to left-handed hitters. I'm still not sold, but I get it if you need pitching, Ben.
Yeah, I think I had a bid, a very small bid in for Fott, but he's been so bad. Still, his K-minus walk this year is 10%. His estimators are all above 4 for his ERA. Yeah, he had a good two-step week versus the Dodgers and the Padres. Most of the Ks came versus the Padres. He only had 2 Ks versus the Dodgers. No walks in either start, so that's good. I think people are just reacting to the two-start week and how desperate it is for pitching. So I get it. I have bids in for him, but I'm not confident at all that Fott's going to be useful. He could just get destroyed very easily. And I guess he was sent to the minors to get stretched out, so he's kind of good now. But there's a reason why they took him out of the rotation to start the year, because he's not very good. So I get the flyer, but I wasn't very interested in him.
I will say he'll be in the rotation for a while, most likely, though, because Gallon's on the IL. There's going to probably be more trades or potential trades there. So, yeah, he's going to get plenty of time to make or break your fantasy team. And, hey, for some of the guys I have rostered right now, I can't judge you. But just be prepared. When it inevitably the regression game comes, because it'll be brutal, he still might pitch plenty of good starts. Not gonna say, but the regression game is going to hurt a lot. So just be fully prepared for that one. If you see him facing a bunch of left-handed hitters, please don't start him that week. That's my one thing, because that's where he gets in his most trouble, and that's what I would worry about. All right, next most added player in the OCs, Ryan Waldschmidt, picked up in 52 OCs, average of $10, high of 34. Picked up in 42 mains, high of 58, average of 22. Weirdly enough, dropped in 2 OCs after just getting recalled from AAA. That was a bit like, held him while he's in AAA, dropped him when he gets back. Don't understand that whatsoever, but Waldy went off. He didn't get any hits in his first 2 games. Got hit by a pitch on Friday, missed Saturday's game, came back, stole a bag, though, on Sunday. That was clutch. But what I do want to point out, just to hopefully give a little optimism for people, is like round one with the D-backs wasn't ideal. I get it. Still, they're one of the most talented hitters they have. Since he went back to AAA on June 17th, he's hitting .286 with 3 home runs, 13 runs scored, 17 RBIs. He had a .939 OPS, so plate discipline was outstanding. What were your thoughts on Waldschmidt this weekend?
He was a top target for me where he was available. I did get him in a spot, and just kind of buying on the cheap after a big prospect got sent down, after people spent a ton of money on him, and just hopefully that he figures out this time around. I didn't break the bank on Waldschmidt, and honestly, I didn't even check the minor league numbers. It's the fact that the Diamondbacks called him back up, and I know they have the openings. He's playing center now. It looks like at the expense of Tommy Troy,
yep,
which is fine. So, yeah, Waldschmidt, he's going to bat low in the lineup, but he should play every day as a righty. And I think, yeah, it's a good shot to take. And I'm pretty sure the prices are pretty low. Like,
yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, good.
10 in the OC and even 22 in the main. I got him below that, so I was happy with that. It's a fine price for a decent prospect. And like I said, he failed once before, Waldschmidt, and then hopefully he made some adjustments in AAA wherever he went, and now he can hopefully be a little more competitive this time around.
And if anybody's curious and they're paying attention at home, I skipped Lou Bob, Trevor Story, and Ryan Jeffers because it's stash back from the IL. We don't have to talk about them. We've talked about them enough. After Waldschmidt, Bailey Ober picked up in 51 OCs for an average of $8, high of 31. He's picked up in 31 main events. So we still have a good amount of main event action here. High of 43, average of 15 for Bailey Ober. Ober returned from the IL this past week. 5 innings, 1 run on a solo homer, 1 walk, and 5 Ks versus the Cleveland Guardians of all teams, so kind of have to temper your hope on that one. But hey, Bailey Ober's doing Bailey Ober things. It's kind of him, Brandon Fott, a lot of like Spider-Man memes I can picture with those two. So, what's your thoughts on the Bailey Ober acquisitions this week?
I said the same exact thought in my mind about Fott and Ober, like just returning pros who aren't very good or haven't been very good. And looking at my ads or like my teams, Ober wasn't available in the 2 mains where I needed pitching, so I didn't try to add him in the other one where he was available. And I had him at a point earlier in the year, Ober. I think I started him for a game that was one of his best ones. And sure, he had a good start back, but it's just the Guardians, 5 Ks, 1 walk. Their lineup's pretty depleted right now. So I kind of think same with the thought. Ober could be fine. He has a 1.19 whip on the year. He has a high ERA, which has kind of always been the thing with Ober, even in his last good year, 2024, almost had a 4 ERA that year, but a whip of 1. because of the home runs. So I don't know. Do you know if the velocity was back up for Ober in that last start, Bubba?
I do not know for sure. I just know it was pretty standard Ober stuff from what I was remembering. Yeah.
Let me see if I can pull it up. I don't want to spend too much time on this. They're showing his EV, if anything. That was 92.6, so that wasn't good. So he got hit hard in that start. Low BABIP. I'm not too optimistic about him. And let's see. It was his fastball was 88.2. His sinker was 88.4. So still pretty slow. So I am not too optimistic here about Ober.
Yeah, neither am I. Again, it's a spec thing. Like on weeks like this, try to get guys for cheap, see if it goes through, see how they, like I probably don't even know how to start the thoughts in the Obers of the world. They're more just depth pieces and maybe you catch lightning in a bottle. So I get the additions, but there wasn't a whole lot to get excited about this week in Fab, and we're explaining that to you. We're more just mentioning guys that may still be on the wire to keep an eye on, and that includes the next most added player in OCs, Mason Montgomery of the Pittsburgh Pirates, picked up in 50 OCs, average of $5, high of 29. He's picked up in 28 mains as well, average of 11, high of 24. He was also dropped in 2-1, top things off. Surprising because Mace Montgomery picked up a save on Saturday. So people would have been like, oh, here we go. It's what we've all wanted. It was his first save of the year. He's been kind of like taking over that leverage role as Soto kind of went into the closer's role. It's kind of been a mixed bag, but Montgomery's awesome. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago, Ben, and then it seemed like he wasn't going to get the save. So in our little group chat, it's like, okay, let's move on and go somewhere else. And I still think he's the best option for them. And maybe some people jumped on him early enough. I did not, but that's just, I think it's a crapshoot in general, but what's your thoughts on Montgomery and that Pittsburgh situation?
I did have him in a bid list where I was looking for a closer. I had him behind Soto because I had a league where Soto was available. I had a significant more money on Soto. I didn't get either one. I had someone else ahead of Montgomery who I ended up getting. We'll discuss that. And I think what happened was there was a doubleheader for the Pirates on Saturday. Soto got the first save, and then he was unavailable for game two, and they got a save again, and that's where Montgomery came in. So they finally gave him the save, like you said, but only the first one of the season. And he has been really good the last 3 weeks. For example, Montgomery has 18 Ks and 8 1/3 innings. So that's pretty good. But I think just the fact that they gave Soto the chance first is a little telling. If I go to Roster Resource, they have actually a shared of Soto and Montgomery as the two options. They're both lefties, ironically. And then even Closer Monkey has them both in a committee. They say in flux as well. So I just think, I mean, Soto has been a lot worse, like you said, but just I think just the lean of having Soto get the save in the first game made me want to add him over Montgomery and even pay more for Soto as well. So it could pay off for Montgomery, but I know people are saying the Pirates might trade for a closer because they're actually competitive. And Soto and Santana have been a mess this year. But if they get shut out on a closer, maybe Montgomery becomes the guy. So it's worth it, but I just don't know if he really has a job yet.
Yeah, he might have even a harder chance to get consistent saves than Wells and Kittredge, but he could. He's got the skills to do it. It's just a matter of getting the role as well. Yeah, I'm going to shift focus to the main event here. Obviously, we'll still talk OCs along the ways, but the most added player in the main event this weekend, don't think anybody had this on their bingo card, folks, coming into the year. Patrick Sandoval picked up in 50 main events, high at $91. Average of 13th, 75th percentile, $16. Sandoval was added in 28 OCs, average of 6, high of 23. He returned from the IL this week. I believe he had Tommy John surgery over a year ago. 4 1/3 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, 5 Ks at the Chicago White Sox. Not bad. He's got a rotation spot. We just talked about Bailey Ober and Brandon Pfaadt. As weird as it has been, I pounded the drum for Sandoval on the Fab Show this week. I would rather have Sandoval than those other guys. So it's not pretty. We know what we're getting. He's the left-handed version of Jose Soriano is the way I talk about him. But just, I get it. It's just weird seeing him as the most added player.
It is, and I did not really – I wasn't too interested in Sandoval at all just because looking at his year-by-year numbers, his career low whip is 1.21, and that was 2021. Every other year has been at least 1.33 or higher. So I am trying to avoid that if possible, and On top of it, he's coming from Tommy John, and the last thing that comes back typically is command. So I don't want a guy with a poor history of walks who's coming back from Tommy John to touch my rotations if I can help. I think I had a bid in firm in one spot, but I was well below where he went in the main event, at least in my leagues. He was double digits in three of my four leagues. Actually, he went for a dollar in one of my mains. I may have gotten someone else over him in that one, I think. But I had a bid in for him, but I kind of almost didn't want to win Sandoval if I could help it. I just don't know if how good he'll be.
That is totally fair. Next one we're going to talk about here, and this is if you weren't careful, this could have gotten murky on you, but Zach Thornton of the New York Mets was picked up in 45 main events, average of 11, high of 54. Zach Thornton was picked up in 21 OCs, average of 9, high of 47. Trent Thornton was picked up in 4 OCs, average of 8. Trent Thornton was picked up in 15 mains, average of 8. That is a reliever for the Cubs who has picked up a couple saves, so I'll give you that. But Zach Thornton, I think, was a target for people here, and not so much in OCs yet, but if he has another good start, he will be. He came and made a spot starting against Boston on July 12th, which would have been Sunday, folks. 7 shutout innings, 2 walks, 5 Ks against the Red Sox. That's pretty, pretty good. And a spot start a few weeks prior, 6 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, 7 Ks against Philadelphia. So when Zach Thornton of the Mets has been called upon, he's looked very solid. Were you interested in Mr. Thornton this week?
No, I missed this one. I heard him on the pod, on the Waxman's pod, and I'm like, oh, I wonder who this guy is. There's too many Thorntons right now in the majors. Like, they came out of nowhere.
Ask Ryan.
That was funny. Also, Trent Thornton, another popular one. He was for the pitcher of the Blue Jays. Yeah, looking at his numbers, Zach Thornton, he wasn't that good this year in the minors. A 4.02 ERA, a 1.36 whip. He was much better in 2025. He had a 0.81 whip and a 1.98 ERA. It's worth a shot looking at his stats now. And his note says that the Mets are going to have him in the rotation to start the second half, which I guess is a good thing if you're investing in Mr. Thornton. Who would he line up for? He's due to face, but the Brewers in Milwaukee, I think that's this Tuesday after the All-Star break. Tough first start. He faced the
Boston and Philly are tough. He did pitch well against them.
Yeah, I think the Red Sox lineup though is so, like, I know they've won what, like 9 games in a row or something, but their lineup is pretty bad.
Remember Yankees fan folks. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, my right shirt. No, it's been on the back of their pitching.
I know.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm being what's the word? I can't think of the word. I'm being not neutral. Opinionated, whatever the opposite of that is. Objective, yeah. With this, the Red Sox are playing, I think, a little over their skis right now. But the Phillies, they have gone through stretches of being bad versus lefties, and he dominated them. But I don't know. I guess I'd rather take a shot on him than I would Ober and Fott. So,
full agree. I don't take a shot on him over Sandoval.
Oh, absolutely. That too. At least with Thornton, there's like a little unknown there where he could be really good. Or as we know, the other guys have definite flaws and have been injured. So I think I would prefer Thornton over the other guys after all that.
Well, let's talk about pitcher you preferred over all of them. And obviously we'll talk about that more when we talk about the ad drops on the week. But Jansen Junk was picked up in 41 main events. Average of $9, high of 22. He was picked up in 9 OCs, average of 7. He was dropped in 2 OCs. Jansen Junk came off the IL on Thursday. 5 innings, 1 earned run, 4 walks, 5 Ks. Back in the rotation, potentially a two-step coming up for him or something. Thoughts on Mr. Junk?
Yes, he was one of my top targets as targeting starters for the upcoming full week. And I was using handy-dandy RotoWire for this. They project him to start Monday, That is the 20th versus the Astros, and then Sunday versus the Padres. So a pretty decent two-step. Junk had some decent success earlier in the year, and then he kind of got hurt. Then he kind of fell apart in May. Could have been injury-related because he did miss all of June and part of July with – I'm not sure what the injury was, a shin. So it must have got hit or something. So I guess those two blow-up starts versus the Braves and Rays were probably his performance, but he was pitching really well beforehand, and I'm looking for volume in some spots. So I figured just take a cheap stab. I kind of overpaid on for junk, as we'll go over, but I just thought someone with them prior signs of life, and hopefully get them a week early if I can.
Nope, I don't mind it if you get them cheap and it works. It's perfect. Luke Weaver was the next most added player. 33 main events, Luke Weaver of the New York Mets. High of 16, average of 8. Picked up in 37 OCs, average of 5, high of 23. Big blown save for Devin Williams on Sunday. He's had a rocky road, but after the game, got that old vote of confidence by the team, which is always a go-getter. Weaver's been awesome. This brings back horror stories because Weaver's one of the Giants to sign for cheap to close. And if we had a closer right now, God forbid, at least maybe they'd be close to 500. But, yeah, people are starting to spec on Luke Weaver, Ben. And in mains, I get it. I'm honestly surprised 37 OCs, considering some of the other people we've talked about already that actually are getting saves weren't even felt like they were that appreciated in OCs. But 33 main events, I think, makes sense if you want to speculate. I find it hard to believe that they move on that easily from Devin Williams unless they're planning on trading him, I guess.
I think the play or the angle is that Weaver could be traded to a team to be the closer.
That I think that works too.
Yeah, I think that's the most widely accepted theory about how he'll become a closer. So there was a team I mentioned. I was looking for closers and saves. I had like $2 on Weaver. I didn't get him in a spot or two, just in case, just to hold and see what happens with the trade deadline coming up in a couple weeks. So it's just, yeah, I think it's more so a Weaver gets traded play than a Williams loses the job play. But either way, it's just a closer spec, and I think he's one of the better ones right now, probably.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. This one's for the Bubba the Bloom Patreon folks. Tim the Tool Man Tawa was picked up in 28 main events, average of $8, high of 20. Picked up in 4 OCs, average of 2, high of 3. Definitely feels like more of a 15-team play. Got recalled on the 5th of July. Didn't get a hit until the weekend, but hit in 3 straight games over the weekend in L.A., 2 home runs and a steal over that stretch. And at the minors, he's been swinging it well. 320, 7 homers, 2 steals, and multiple stints there. Massive positional flexibility. When you look at Tim, the Tool Man, Tawa, he has, as I pull it up, first base, second base, outfield. So that's pretty sweet as well. What were your thoughts on the aggressiveness or excitement for Tim, the Tool Man, this week?
He was not someone that I put on any fab list. I did not catch this in my research. I'm looking at the lineup tracker. Yeah, he started the last 4 games at first base. He started 5 of the last 6.
Davin Smith down. It makes sense, actually. Interesting.
Yeah, but then if you look at the depth chart, and I should look at Prospects Live for our buddy Curlin and see what he thinks. I don't have that link readily available, I don't think. I'll bring it up while I'm talking. So, yes, Davin Smith has been playing first base for the Diamondbacks. He's gone now. They think on Fangraphs that Ildemar Vargas is going to be the first baseman, but he's only played second base last 2 times he started. Where are the Diamondbacks? Curlin thinks it is Tawa at first base. So if you want to follow the Kings lead, you would go for Tawa. Otherwise, stay away. But yeah, you mentioned the eligibility for him, pretty solid. He actually had 2 homers and a steal. So I think that also boosts the appeal of adding Tawa. Of course, you don't get those stats now that you've added him this week. So I it's a good flyer, and it seems like first base is his for now. So I like the add. Only at 28 adds, though, so let's see my leagues. He is available in 2 of my 15 still if I wanted to add him. So see how this week goes. Well, actually, it's only a 3-day – it's a 3-game week, so small sample. But he could be a sneaky add in the deeper league, especially with that eligibility, Tawa. So I think it's a good chance to take.
Yeah, no, I like it, especially the deeper leagues. And if he catches fire, he'll have some 12 appeal. But every day at bats, we talk about that at the corner infield especially. Could be big. A couple more here. Ben, Clay Holmes is supposed to be returning from the IL in a couple of weeks. He's getting closer is what I'll say. Picked up in 27 mains, average of 8, high of 26. Picked up in 37 OCs. I was a bit surprised. Average of $3, high of 16. Clay Holmes, he was rough his last 2 starts before he landed on the IL in late May. But has shown signs of being good. What was your excitement level or interest in Clay Holmes? Because I honestly didn't have a lot to get too excited about there.
I did not look to add Holmes anywhere. Looking at his numbers, pretty underwhelming. 12.6 K minus walk on the year, 20.9% K rate, decently high walk rate. The estimators are all under four. I think that's mainly because of his ground ball tendencies, 56% on the season. Has gotten lucky with the BABIP, it's 250. I am not, I'm as objective. Like, I don't care that he used to be on the Yankees, that he was fine for the Yankees, but I just don't think that he is, well, considering the way pitching is, I get stashing Holmes if you can't afford to do it, but I just don't think he's that good of a pitcher. I think definitely the strikeouts aren't there. If you want to try to help with like ERA and WHIP, I get it. Let's look at his WHIP. His WHIP actually has been fine this year, but the previous 2 years it was 1.3. So maybe this year's like a little bit of a abnormality, especially with the high ground ball rate for Holmes. So it's worth a shot. I just didn't think to add him. He's available in one of my leagues still. I guess two. One's the main event. So maybe I'll look to add him. Actually, no, only one league. It's the listener league, but I'm not too upset that I missed out on trying to add him.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't have a lot of time to stash right now. And it might not be that long, but I still just don't have the time to stash.
That's a good point.
I'd rather be looking at guys like, give me a chance on Thornton. And given Holmes came cheap, not going to knock that. But like a Thornton, a Sandoval, I'd take a chance on. Ober and Fott, maybe. Like, I'm not still in love with them. But Holmes kind of falls in that world. Like, you're talking about similar profiles that I'm not, like, overly excited about. But in some of these deep leagues, you just need a pitcher with a pulse and see if he can catch fire. Trust me, you've seen my roster's been. That's what we're rolling with. And fire has been caught for at least a week. We'll see if that sticks around. But all right, let's look at our ad drops for the week, Ben. I should have given you a bigger heads up there, but pull yours up. We'll get those covered because I want to have some time to get some listener questions and plus go over your recent article on the Patreon that, if anything, might be therapeutic for people or just more frustrating. Not sure how, but when you got your players, your picks for the week, let me know.
All right, I'm ready to go. So first up is Listener League. The auction, I got Edwin Arroyo, drop Blaze Jordan, who you mentioned before, 4-0. Jordan's just kind of losing playing time, and he hasn't been hitting that well, so I figured just go for someone who's playing all the time. And then I also added TJ Friedel, dropped Luis Angel Acuna, 3-0. So $7 spent there. Next up is the New Jersey main event. This one I got Ryan, this is where I got Ryan Waldschmidt, dropped Yohendrick Panango, 16-15, so I was happy with that win. Added Colton Cowser, dropped Victor Barrichotto, 12-6. I added Jansen Junk, dropped Connor Prelip, 8-5. And I got the dreaded tie, Jorge Polanco, dropping Sean Key, 6-6. So this is my worst of my three main events, so that's why. But it's making a little bit of a move. I think
you want a tiebreaker, so of course it's your worst.
Yeah. I'm not winning all the other ones, but doing it right there. So and then next up is the third main event. I also got Jansen Junk here. I dropped Cole Young, 12-2. I added Mitch Bratt, dropped Connor Prelip, 3-0. And I added Sean Newcomb in case he gets a vulture save every now and then, dropped Jack Perkins, 2-0. And then finally, the hybrid main. Come on, it's not loading. Where is it? There it is. I got this one's funny. You're going to appreciate this one. Got Jordan Romano, dropped Hogan Harris, 18-1. So a little bit of an overspend.
Yes, sir.
I got TJ Friedel again, dropped Volpe finally. I got the bad juju off my team, 2-1. And then I continue to struggle getting a third baseman. I added Jose Fermin, dropped Sean Keyes, 1-0. Fermin's been playing a lot at the expense of Blaze Jordan. So I think the Cardinals have a decent matchup this week for Ryan's tracker. So I figured give him a shot, see how he's been doing pretty well, Fermin. So it was a little bit of a flyer till Chapman gets back.
Yeah, he's not a bad 15-teamer. I played him in DFS once in a while. He's super cheap. It's like six, usually something around there. So yeah. not a bad break for that. Just question for myself and maybe the listeners. The TJ Friedel ad you made in a few leagues, is that strictly because they have, I think they're in Colorado to start things off? And then was it strictly a schedule play is my question.
Yes. So I added him in two spots. Then I got a DM from Randy on Twitter, Randy Haynes. We were the only two people to add Friedel in the main event.
That's what I was wondering, because I knew it wasn't a popular ad, but I had a feeling why you did, and that's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, I think so. We're the Rockies. I got to pull it up. It's because the Reds are in Colorado.
Yep, to open up the second half.
And it's Feltner and Lorenzen. So he gets at least two starts, and he could pinch hit in the Freeland game. And so I figured why not. I got him for $2 in the one, three the other. Figured it's a good stream.
Yep, no doubt about that one. Is that all of your teams? I think so, right?
Yes. Yeah, I covered all four.
Okay, cool. All right, so real quick for me, the Vegas 12-team league we do on Sunday. Just real quick, it's not me, but Edwin Diaz was available, went for 205, runner-up of 16. Just want to throw that one out there. 12-team I got Kyle Karros, dropped Matt Shaw 6-6. Ryan Bloomfield was the other six, so he was happily sad that I won that one. I got Jordan Romano, dropped Andrew Alvarez 6-6. That feels like a much better Jordan Romano bid. We'll get to the reason why in a minute. I got JKG, Joshua Kuroda, Grauer, Dr. Hurston Waldrop 3-0. Need a middle infield help with Zach Geloff on the IL. That'll be a trend for my ads this week. Then I picked up Matthew Liberatore, dropped Walker Buehler. Buehler had his moment, and that moment has gone up in flames. And I want to mention with Liberatore, because he's had his moments as well of being a complete mess, but he at least shows signs of life. I was actually surprised he was available. He's coming off 6 shutout innings with 1 walk, 6 Ks against the Braves. It's been 3 earned runs, 1 earned run. He had like a 3-start stretch where it was really brutal. So like it'll be a matchup play, but I know the skills are there with Liberatore. Just the consistency, not so much. All right, my Vegas AC. This is where it gets fun. I need saves because I have Tanner Scott, and I know I'm going to still get saves from Tanner Scott, but I'm about to lose full-time Tanner Scott. And then it just leaves me with David Bednar. And I know I can gain ground in saves in this league. Now, this might not be the approach to take, but this is what I did. Picked up Jordan Romano. That's not the bad part. 26 to runner-up of 2. That's the bad part with Jordan Romano. Like, I have a lot of money because I've lost every bid basically this year on a big player. So I had like almost around $300. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to make sure I get Jordan Romano and see where it goes. That's why I bid so high. Was it the smart thing to do? Time will tell. But if I can just somehow squeak like 6, 7, 8 saves the rest of the way from Jordan Romano and it just doesn't completely nuke me, I'm totally happy with that. I'll live with that situation. Hopefully more than that, but it's Romano and we know how this could obviously burn up in flames. Drop Mason Barnett, by the way, for those wondering. And then the other middle infielder I was looking at a lot this week was Mr. Jake Rake Cronenworth. Picked him up, dropped How You Lee 6-1. I was surprised there wasn't as much love for Mr. Cronenworth this week. Talked to Jason Santu about this one as well. I know it's been a really rough start, but he's come off the IL. And the last couple of weeks since July 1st, Jake Cronenworth has been extremely serviceable. I noticed it when I was writing the Fab column. I'm like, wow, he's better than I expected. Since July 1st, 333 average, 2 homers and 2 steals. Like, still a 30% K rate, which is terrifying. But in a 15-team league for a middle infield fill-in, I'll see if we can get some flashbacks of the Rake out there. My OLAC, I picked up Robert Gasser, dropped Connor Prelip 12-9. Gasser got gassed on Sunday, but should have some time in the rotation with Harrison out and some other injuries. I originally had that bid around like 26. I dropped it to 12 after Sunday. Figured other people would, and it worked. Then I picked up Luis Campusano, dropped Jimmy Crooks 6-0. I like Campusano a lot, as long as Fermin's out of the way. I think Campy's a great catcher too, so that's just that kind of – I'm going to use that catcher too as a rotating door for the rest of the year. And then I didn't get the other middle infielders I wanted, so I picked up Joey Ortiz, dropped Haiyu Lee 3-0. Ortiz hitting over 300 in July with a couple homers, so don't mind that. My listener auction picked up Jordan Romano, dropped Davis Martin 23-1, added Andrew Kittredge, dropped Walker Buehler 22-1. I need saves in this league if you're curious. So, we're playing the game there. I added Joey Ortiz, dropped Blaze Jordan 3-0. Added Jake Cronenworth, dropped Griffin Conine 3-3. So you can see some trends with what I have here. And then my Beat Bubba OC picked up Eugenio Suarez, dropped Owen Casey 11-7. Pretty pumped on that one. Picked up Ezekiel Duran, dropped Blaze Jordan 3-0. Zeke's playing pretty well. And again, I just needed like middle infield fill-ins with Geloff out of the way right now. So that was the world we were looking at with a lot of the $3 bids down there. All right, Ben, let's get to it. Let's talk about your most recent work on the Patreone. Ben did this last year, midseason and end of season. He's bringing it back for the 2026 season for the people that help support the Bubba and the Bloom Patreon over there. It's a midseason look at the preseason ADP versus the Razzball player Raider at the halfway point. I'll obviously let him talk much more about it. But what's the gist of the article? And then we'll get into kind of what you discovered in said article.
Yep. So like you just said, Bubba, second year of doing this. Last year, I had the idea of just curious of, I was curious about how ADP actually was shaking out, because I know we here on the pod always try to look at the prior season for a decent amount of time before we move on to the following season. I try to do that a lot with my own I don't know, like analysis, if you want to call it that. So this is a good way of doing it because just seeing how our ADP is returning value, I think, is something that's never really looked at. Because like people always mention player raters and like, okay, like Jordan Walker, for example, is a massive breakout. But then like we know the first round, for example, has been horrible. So I just wanted to quantify that. And I think I actually said in one of the lines was that the first round has been an absolute disaster this season, which in the article, I actually quantify that using dollar values or the auction values. And I look at the first 23 rounds of the main event for this year, all 60 leagues. I do the 23 rounds because that's equivalent of an auction. So like in Bubba's AC, for example, the first 23 rounds of a 15-team league are auctioned off. Then there's the 7 rounds of reserve, which is a snake draft. And Ariel Cohen, this is the other big piece of it. He tweets out, I don't know if it's yearly, but you actually made me aware that he updated the values. So one thing that Ariel tweets out every, I don't know if it's every year or every couple of years, is a conversion chart for main event or any 15-team league ADP to dollar values. So the equivalency of like if you wanted to compare the 101 pick to an auction, what is that actually worth? Because like, for example, Shohei Ohtani has a auction price, an AAV, in conjunction with his ADP, but what's the actual, I guess, quote unquote, apples to apples comparison of that number one pick? What should it be? Whereas like people might pay a little bit more for Ohtani or maybe a little less depending on how the pool is. So I use Ariel's matrix, it's like 345 picks. I compare that to the top 345, that's 15 times 23. I compare the Razzball values for the article, it was through the 7th of July is when I did the cutoff. And I just basically subtract the two and I see who's above their ADP value for Ariel's matrix that he releases or who's below that ADP value. And I kind of just break it down a few different ways. I look at hitters, I look at catchers. So I take the catchers out of the hitter pool, look at catchers only, and I look at starters and then relievers. And I go into different pockets that we might discuss. I actually broke out the first three rounds in detail on a player-by-player basis just to kind of show how bad it has been this year. And I went back at the end of last season. And I unfortunately, Razzball doesn't historize their player rater values. I reached out to, I think it was Gray about this, or one of the guys, I forget who it was. And so I had to try to – so I ended up using FanGraphs for 2023 and 2024, and I tried to get the settings as accurate as possible to compare to Razzball's. And so I have a historical look back as well for my own records. And then one thing I also looked at too was, so how did 2025 mid-year compare to 2025 end of year? And how did the overall loss value change? And then also, you can also look at like player by player. I didn't do that for this article because it's only the midway point. I didn't want to get too into the weeds, but I look at the most profitable picks in the top 345, the least profitable, and also the players who weren't drafted in the first 23 rounds, who were the highest earners, who essentially, I said, were like free money because there were a reserve cost in drafts and they're just dominating. So that's the gist, but I'm sure, like you said, we'll probably go in a little more detail now.
Yeah, no, it's a lot going on there, but it's really, really cool once you break it down, you look at it. To what Ben's looking at. And I guess like the first thing I have to tell myself every time is we're talking about all these underachievers, quote unquote, is what we're looking at. But we're also using a value that's for a full season and we're halfway, correct? Or did you actually, so they have time, as you mentioned in the article, like
yeah,
a lot of these guys have time to get to that number. So in reality, if someone's already positive at the moment, that means they're having a heck of a season. It's the way I look at it because they're already beating their quote unquote price per 80, what their ADP price should be. But then there's the other guys, as long as they're not too far off, like you wouldn't be surprised if some of the big guys still get there and make it happen for you. So that's a standout for me. What position, Ben, turned out to be the most profitable so far this season?
Well, I made a point to identify some early round catchers that have been extremely profitable, particularly the rounds 4 and 5 catchers. So I also have a breakout of the average loss by position. I'm going to find that real quick to see how it actually shakes out. So on average, hitters have done much better than pitchers, but catchers aren't far off from the hitter average. So hitters have lost an average of $3. per player based on their ADP and their return value so far. Catchers are at a loss of 450. But catchers aren't normally a pretty good hitting position, so I think it's a pretty good win for the catchers. And then, like I mentioned, the round 4 or 5 catchers, so listeners might be able to guess who these are. Shea Langeliers, William Contreras, guy I'm wearing, Ben Rice, Hunter Goodman, and Drake Baldwin. And I pointed out that Baldwin, despite having that IL stint and then slumping when he got back, is still was a positive $1 on his ADP when I did this. So those five have been huge, huge winners so far. I'm surprised that Wilson was – well, he's basically at even. So that's a win in the eyes of what I was doing. So all if you went with one of those guys as your catcher one, or even maybe you double tapped, it's been really good so far.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive when Rice and Goodman, Rice $12 over – Goodman 15 on. I'm gonna remind people a lot. That's $12 and $15 over what your end of season should be, and they still have like 2.5 months to go. So that's pretty impressive stuff with those gains. I know I kind of went by it real quick, but like if you want to briefly talk about how the first, second, third, like the early rounds, obviously the dollar per ADP goes down, so it's on paper easier to get there for certain players, because we joke about it all the time. I know Ron Chandler talks about it in his books that like most first round players are always a negative value. It's just to what extent, because it's so hard to reach that number because it is so high. Like if you see Ariel's price tag, like I'm just off the top of my head, we're probably talking $40, $50 for certain players. Like that's difficult to do. Even 35 is tough for a lot of guys to do. And you're asking 15 guys in the first round. Then if you want to take it to the second round, it's 30. It's still probably over $20 in value for most of them as you're going through it. One injury almost derails that possibility is what's crazy. Back to your Drake Baldwin point. He's still worth like $15 or something, which is nuts. But what did you see like on those early rounds as bad as it was, and as many people have already mentioned all over social media and podcasts of how bad it was, you actually quantified it.
Yeah. And you made a good point there, Bubba, which I was going to say, and that's the first round can only really go down. It's very hard to go up on those draft costs. And it's a good argument for fading the first round in an auction, which I think you did perhaps in your AC.
My OLAC and my AC. Yes, I did that in that one.
Yeah, so you saved yourself a little heartache by doing that, assuming you end up getting the right players and with that money. But that's a different story.
Actually, no, I got JRAM in my AC. I just forgot about that. I did get JRAM,
but he was doing pretty well until he got hurt, yeah. Though.
I got him for like $4 or $5 below AAV. So I'll still tell myself we're fine there.
Yeah, he may not be that big of a loss if he comes back healthy. Power's been down, but the seals have been up, so it could be a wash. So. So like I said, you can only really go down in the first round. I'll say, so the cumulative total, so if you take all the ADP dollar values from Ariel's sheet or his matrix and you take the earn value and subtract all that money from it, so what all the first round has earned minus what their draft cost was, the total is negative $375.40. And then I pointed out what it was this time last year. It was it was negative $146.80. So we're over $200 of lost value compared to 2025 at the All-Star break.
That's rough.
So it has been way worse this year in terms of the first round. I guess the player who's closest to meeting his value is Corbin Carroll, who's a minus 17. His cost of pick 13 was about $36. He's returned 19 so far. If you want to look at Otani, his ADP price was $52. He's returned 27, so he's been a minus 25. The biggest loser of the first round, not probably isn't surprising, is Garrett Crochet. He's a minus 44 because he was a cost of $37. He's actually negative 7 on the player rater. So you're basically at a loss of $17 no matter who you took in the first round. Even Bobby Witt is minus 18 just because like the power isn't really there. His average is kind of below what you're probably hoping for. It's 280, but you're kind of hoping for like a 290 plus with Witt. The RBIs are down. Judge is hurt. Acuna's been hurt. Scooble is hurt. Soto had an IL stint. JRAM. Skeens hasn't been a top pitcher. This goes on and on. So the first round has been a massive miss. Second round hasn't been much better, but the second round is our first positive players. Nick Kurtz, of all people, and then Kyle Schwarber. They're both positive $2 on their ADP price. Also, a bunch of guys are pretty close. Caminero, Sanchez, Miller are all within $5 of their cost. Same with Sale, Smith, Yamamoto, Edwin Diaz, Cal Raleigh, the big losers in this round. And compared to the first round, the total cost is like negative 165. So a big difference, but also like the, we're comparing it to a smaller value as well. So it should be closer than the first round, but still pretty bad. And the third round, I think, is arguably worse. It actually has a higher loss. Yes, it has a higher loss in the second. There's some better players. Let me go back. There's better winners in the third round, but overall there's a lot more losses. So the standouts, and I even wrote this down, the two guys that are pretty risky that we labeled as risky going into drafts, PCA and Yordan, are the most profitable in this round. They're, PCA is a $36 player versus $26 draft cost. Yordan's 40 versus 25. So positive 10 on PCA, positive 15 on Yordan. So got some injuries. Lindor's in there, Hunter Brown, Wyatt Langford, Reagan's, who we both liked. Just a lot of landmines in the first three rounds this year.
Yeah, really, really big landmines. Like you started off saying in an auction, if you faded the first round, you could have tried to fade the first three rounds potentially, and you'd have a lot of money to spend, but you could be interestingly well off. We talked about those catchers real quick. One thing I know Ryan and I talked about on some of our recaps shows, we haven't got to starting pitching yet, but we will, and it'll correlate really well with what you nailed here. But we talked about before, like there was that pocket in the middle rounds, like rounds 5, 6, 7, somewhere in there, where we were like, okay, there's all these young guys that we're kind of nervous about. And then there's these studs we like a lot. And all in all, the studs were obviously very good, but some of these like older guys we know, like, were really well. So going back to that kind of idea of like, you know, it's saving money in a balanced approach, I guess, in an auction. If you were in this range, now again, young guys, I was not drafting, but some of these other guys were of interest to me. This pocket started to turn out really well, Ben.
Right, yeah. Some of the names here are Gausman, Glasnow, Evaldi, Gray, Drew Rasmussen. Gausman and Glasnow are actually losses. Glasnow has actually returned more value than Gausman because Gausman's been kind of rough lately. And of course, I left out the three biggest names, which are Cam Schlittler, Chase Burns, and the Miz himself, Jacob Mizrowski. So even if you took for the most part, like this is a very good pocket, all positive value returned in terms of like raw dollars. But, and the other one was Ryan Pepiot, I included. He hasn't pitched. He has no dollar value. I think he's barely pitched this year. So he's basically just been a loss. Gausman, he has pretty good peripheral still. I noted in the article, I think he'll be fine. This is more of like a luck thing. And then Glasnow, someone I never touch. So that one's not surprising to me. He's always been injured. So, and even today I was going through my rankings file for the offseason this year, and I was using it to prep for tonight's one, or to use for tonight's gladiator that we're in. And I was looking, I had Mizrowski at SP 45. So it's, I know I wasn't alone in that. People were fading him. Just one of those things you can't really see coming.
That's like, I know it's kind of off topic from the article, but that's one thing I appreciate. That's why I enjoy, you know, all the work we do together and everything, is you have that stuff next to go back and look at it to kind of fine tune your process. That's probably why you're so successful at what you do. And a lot of other people do that too. I'm not saying they don't, but literally today you were texting us already going, man, I was looking at this and this, but, and you're already talking about how do I reevaluate for next year? And we're still on July 13th at the moment. And Ben has two teams that could still contend for some big money. It's just, he's already sitting there going, okay, what did I miss in this situation? And maybe it's just a fluke thing, who knows, but the fact he's already thinking that way, is there's a reason that certain people always seem to do well in these events. Last thing I'm going to do here, because I want people to actually potentially look at this article and check it out, because like, it's really, really good. You have a couple cell charts of like the biggest, I guess, what's the proper word? The most profitable, least profitable in the first 23 rounds of a draft, so on and so forth. And then you also have an undrafted outside of the top 23. So what I want from you, Ben, is I want your most surprising one in each of these pockets. And so just shoot from the hip if you want. But what was your most surprising like dollar earner in the top 23 rounds drafted, I guess?
Well, I already mentioned the Miz. He's actually besides the most profitable. The spoiler alert, he's the most profitable player in fantasy this year based on this method. I want to say the bus driver, but I liked him, so I took him. I'm going to say Miguel Vargas.
Yeah, I think that's a fair one. Vargas, like, I know a lot of people or liked Marsh. Him. I liked him. Marsh should be the guy for me. Like, Marsh. He's fourth on this list. He's earned $23 in value. His ADP dollar, he was worth a dollar in ADP. He's earned 25. Like, That's insane. He barely made this criteria. He almost made the free agent one that's coming up. Yeah. Like, that's really impressive stuff from Brandon Marsh. And it doesn't look like he's going to stop anytime soon. What's one of the more surprising, least profitable ones, I guess? And I will preface, a lot of these are like first and second rounders, which is kind of expected.
Yeah, I will say it's got to be Ohtani, I think, because most of the other guys are hurt or I had concerns about. Ohtani is, he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. He's the 15th least, or he has the 15th highest loss this year. So I'm going to go, and the other guys are mostly injured. So I'm going to go Ohtani.
A ton of these are injuries. And so I mean, I'm going to go with the guy that's hurt, but I'm going to preface it because before he was hurt, it was pretty bad. There's a lot of closers on this list. I could easily just go with Ryan Walker and laugh and say he's been minus $31. What I'm going to mention, though, is, and his price went up a ton thanks to the WBC, is Daniel Palencia. I know he's been hurt for about a month now, but he only had 3 saves up to that. So it was a massive disappointment already. And I don't think anybody saw that one coming. And he's been on minus $25 value, according to ADP, so far this draft season. And that's not going to change anytime soon because he's not coming back to probably late July, early August. So that's one of those. If you drafted Palencia, because you probably drafted him as your RP1, like the way his price went up towards the end of draft season, that's going to hurt a lot. So that one stood out to me. And then undrafted, obviously, you know, Jordan Walker leads the way here. Is that your most surprising, or is there someone else on this list?
I'm between two names, Jake Bowers and Eduardo Rodriguez.
Love Jake Bowers. Very happy about that one.
Yeah, that was great ad by you. I at least have Bowers in DCs because I knew he could have potential. I didn't expect $22 of profit potential. So I guess I'll say Eduardo Rodriguez. He's been a positive $16.
It's amazing when you don't have a whip of 1.4, what that can do to for your success. I guess for me, outside of Bowers, who was like my first pickup all season, I'm going to give a shout to Casey Schmidt because I think his value dropped so much because of the hand injury that like he was going undrafted basically. And he's been a monster between his multi-position flexibility and everything else. He's got like 19 home runs at the break. Like he's been outstanding for a $20 return. All right, before we do listener questions, any final thoughts on this? Like you can say some more things if you want, but just kind of to put a bow tie on it for the people. Because I think I love the article. It opens my eyes to a lot of things. And for me, it opens my eyes to a dilemma I always have. I've talked about on this show many times, and I've been better this year, but I still fight it. I need to be even more aggressive in Fab. Like I've been aggressive, but I'm looking at what's left this season. I still like I have like 150 to 200 bucks in most leagues. Like, that's too much money right now, the way things are going. It feels that way. Maybe not. Who knows? But that's why I see that looking at I could have been aggressive on these guys early on. That last chart, that could have been something I could have approached differently. But what final thoughts do you have on this this article?
Yeah, I like your point about the last chart because it tells you it's probably worth to be risky early on in Fab and maybe overspend to get one of these guys. Like Jordan Walker in an OC, he's undrafted, but if you were to Fab him and pay big money for him, then you have a first round player all year. So that's where the value comes in. But my biggest takeaway is that I need to pay even less attention to ADP. I hear all the time every year how great NFBC ADP is, especially the main event. But this says it's horrible. The one number I didn't read is that so in an auction, there's in 15 team league auction, there's $3,900 assigned to all the teams. So I even quantify it here. The total loss value is negative $1,800. So $1,800 have been earned, almost half has been earned by players who weren't drafted in the top 23 rounds.
Wow.
So that's like people, you have to like sit on that for a minute. Almost half the value has been returned by people not in the top 23 rounds. So it's just that like 80. And we talked about this before, Bubba. A lot of the ADP early on is tied to projections because everyone uses like the different calculators, like Tanner Bell spreadsheet, for example. So we always go for projections at the end of the season. Yeah, they're great, at a bigger level, but on a player to player basis, they're always wrong. Like there's never a player we review who's exactly right. I think Brandon Marsh may have been like pretty close one of the last couple of years, but even he was off by like a run on an RBI. It's very rare that it's spot on. So the projections have value and I still use them when I draft, but I think I want to get away from, like, I don't always fall into the trap of ADP. Like I kind of went with Matt McClain in the DC. I kind of annoyed by that because when he rose up draft boards, for example, but just trying to not, I think the best use of ADP, and I said this before, is to let it tell you when you need to take a player, not necessarily if you should take a player at that cost. So that's like the biggest thing. And this just proves that ADP is kind of useless more often than not. So that's my takeaway.
No, I love it. And I'm really looking forward at the end of the season to see, because a lot of these guys have a great chance to move up. There's nothing denying that. Like you mentioned it early on, and especially the guys up top that have really big negative values, they can shrink that. Probably still be negative because, just like we said earlier, it's tough to reach those numbers, period, for a lot of players. But it'll change the overall numbers, which you already have from last year, and can compare them, and we'll see where that goes, and we'll talk about that in the offseason. But for now, let's talk about some listener questions, Ben. And we had one from the YouTube here. Conk says, need to activate Logan Henderson and would like to add Jackson Jobe. He's pitching. He's doing some rehab starts right now. It's a pitching-heavy league. I need to drop two between Bolte, Jung-Hoo Lee, Eldridge, or Soto Gomez, the closer for Yoandrés Gómez from Minnesota. It's a total bases league, not a home run category league, if you're curious. So when you're saying total bases, I would like to keep the bats. I'm probably dropping Soto and man, that's tough. If it's total bases, Jung-Hoo's actually really, really good. I don't know. I go Soto for sure, Ben. I don't know where you go elsewhere.
I was between Soto and Jung-Hoo Lee, I think, as well.
Yeah.
But I know we both like Bolte. It's close between him and Jung-Hoo Lee, but
that's where I was going. Soto for sure. There's either Bolte or Lee for me. It's one of those two.
Yeah. I mean, if you need steals, then Bolte is the obvious play over Lee. Yep. Lee has the better average, so I don't know. I would say Soto and Jung-Hoo Lee.
Yep, that's where I'm leaning as well. So we're on the same page there. From the Discord, Adam W says, is it a good time to start focusing on categories more? Namely, would you start a steals guy over a better hitter yet? And this is one that I know a lot of people will probably get this question almost every week until we agree on when to do this, Ben. And I will revert to you on this because you're much better at paying attention to those statistical jumps. What's your thoughts on this situation? Is it time? Like, we have 10 fab periods to go. So we are like 2.5 months away, kind of.
I'm going to say yes, because going into fab this weekend, I actually looked at my teams and wrote down which stats I need to target. So I'm starting to look at it now. I don't know if I'd go as far as sitting like a significantly better player for a steals guy. I would still try to play the better player. If I have like two roster spots to play with, maybe I sneak the steal guy in for somebody else, but I don't want to go too extreme yet, but I am looking with my ads and starts to see what stats I need.
Yeah, I'm not extreme yet, but to your point, I've paid attention. Like, it's more of a tiebreaker for me. Like, if I'm fabbing, who gets higher in the waterfall type questions? If it's lineup lock, if I'm down to two guys, which one provides what I need more of, if that makes sense. So I'm using it as a tiebreaker for now. I'm not focusing it, but I did look at some stuff earlier today, and I know there's like two leagues. Most leagues I'm doing fine in the steals. There's two, though, where if I could find a guy for 2.5 months that steals a lot, I could jump like 4, 5, 6 spots, which adds up in a hurry. That might be in those two leagues, that might be something I'm starting to do type questions. But, and I mentioned earlier, like a couple weeks ago, my AC, I started looking at wins, strikeouts, and saves. I could do a lot of, or that was wins and strikeouts for sure. I could do a lot of moving and saves. That's why I picked up Romano. But, with the wins and the strikeouts, I did that massive two-step week, and it kind of was a break even is what it felt like. But yeah, I am paying more attention to it. The long-winded way of saying it. And then Lang says, what's your takeaway from the Fab article, Ben? Anything you see there going to change the way you approach offseason rankings or draft strategy? I think you kind of hit on that.
Yeah. Try to fade ADP more than I usually do.
Yeah. So really good stuff has always been. The article is a hit. It's always great to see that one come out. Now, I know I say always, it's the second year, but it's really cool to see those numbers. And you were like texting me and Ryan as you're working on it, throwing numbers out there, and we're all just like, okay, where's the article? We want to read it now, because there's just, you're just like, all these cool like numbers. I'm like, I want to see it all put together now. But like, he's quizzing us on, so who do you think was this, or who do you think was this? And he's got all the, I'm just like, well, it's kind of a fun game actually from a fantasy baseball nerd. But really good stuff. Appreciate it. Plus recapping Fab, always a good time. But I guess one last time, any final thoughts as we home run derby's going on right now, and we got the couple days before we get some more baseball in our lives.
You ever listen to CBS? You ever listen to their pod?
Once in a while. It's tough to, there's so many things in my rotation, but I do once in a while, yes.
Have you ever caught the Fantasy Feud episodes?
Yes.
So I think next year, or next time I do this, it'd be a good Fantasy Feud game to play with you for like the most profitable, least profitable, and then also the most profitable outside the top 345, because who's the top player, and then like you do the whole thing and try to figure out the top eight people or whatever, you know. But have to get like Ryan or somebody else to do that, so you actually a little competition.
We'll have to, that's a great idea. We will have to do something like that, because it was
credit
kind of
to Frank Stample though for his, it's his idea.
Oh no, we'll give him a shout, because they did Fantasy Feud at FPAS this past year. It was awesome. Yeah. They brought it live, and they like had the whole production and everything. The guys from the Palazzo podcast made it go live there. They had the two tables, the buzzers, and everything. It was pretty sweet. So that'll be back at FPAS this year for those that are going. And it's I think it was Saturday night, and it was a lot of fun. But all right, we'll wrap it up there. Make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at @BDentric. If you want to check out the article, it's on the Bubba and the Balloon Patreon. Go check that out. But until next time, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 867. Catch y'all later.